Well, such a joy to have the opportunity to talk with you today, Toyin. And as a founding member of the group, we certainly want to speak extensively about Amani Winds. But I wonder if you could give us an idea, at least as one of those members, from your own musical journey. I read from a bio. It says, grew up surrounded by her parents' enormous record collection. So it sounds like very early on you were exposed to lots of music. What was that environment like, and how did it take you on a journey to want to be an artist yourself?
Well, my mother was a flutist all the way through college, and my father worked for the National Endowment for the Arts. So he would get free tickets to the, I'm from D.C., so we would get free tickets to the Washington Opera, to the ballet, to the symphony through his work through the government funding or federal government funding for the country. So I grew up listening to music all the time. Music was, and my dad was also a jazz historian and a poet. And in his 20s, he was hanging out in New York jazz clubs, listening to John Coltrane develop his sound. So yeah, there was no lack of music in my background. And growing up in D.C., it's such a great place to be an artist or a musician because the Kennedy Center's there, and they have all sorts of programs for young musicians. And there's a wonderful organization called the D.C. Youth Orchestra, which at the time was unique in the country in that it was about 60% African American. And as a young African-American musician, it was just great having that kind of playing with people who looked like me. And that's part of the reason why I joined Amani Winds eventually, was because it was going to be musicians of color who I was performing with.
Did that it sounds as if it would have a very profound effect. And sadly, we've not always seen those opportunities to people of color that they sometimes will find their way to it, or in your mm-hmm. case have the good fortune of as you say, seeing the performers who look like you and adding that added inspiration. I would guess that has to be something that you hold to very dearly and try to transmit to students you work with and audiences you perform for, and just all of those contacts and exposures through the residency programs that the ensemble has done over the years, that feeling of in this very unique way, moving that forward, paying it forward, if you will.
Absolutely. I mean, I'm just part of, as all musicians are, you're part of a legacy. You've got a tree of people who paved the way before you. And I grew up in the 80s, and so the things were relatively easy for me. But for my parents were very smart and found me an African-American flute teacher when I was a flute. I took flute before I took oboe. And so I had African-American flute teacher. I had an African-American oboe teacher. And so I had these people who I was looking to as inspiration who had had a terrible time actually coming up as classical musicians. My life was relatively easy. I often say, somebody recently asked me, have I experienced a lot of racism as a classical musician? And the answer is not really. I've experienced more sexism than racism, honestly, which I don't know what that means, but I guess there's progress happening. And yes, as a teacher, I look to not just for my African-American students, but I bring all of myself to every student that I have, which includes, of course, a large part, my racial background, which comes with a lot of wonderful cultural influences, not the least of which is Prince or, you know, Stevie Wonder. But that's not necessarily, I bring that knowledge to Mozart, the Mozart Oboe Concerto, just as much as I bring anything else to my teaching and my playing, honestly.
many different places to find the inspiration, and I certainly would not in any way diminish the influence of great artists like Stevie Wonder and Prince. Why not? I have a feeling that would be an incredible jam session if they got together with Mozart. That might be a lot of fun. Maybe one day we'll have a chance to to get that on tape.
My dad, he actually wrote a series of poetry about the idea of what if J.S. Bach and John Coltrane met in heaven and jammed together. And so our French horn player, Jeff Scott, he wrote a whole concert-length piece about that idea. And he takes the Bach-Goldberg variations and A Love Supreme and kind of combines those in many different ingenious ways, and we do this whole concert-like program. And my father actually is reading his poetry on stage with us while we do this performance. And we got a string quartet, us, Imani Wins, and a jazz trio backing him up. So that's funny you should mention that. I mean, you must be some sort of psychic. So thank you for bringing that forward.
Misters Bach and Coltrane, I'm sure, would be very, very proud of the collaborative effort, I'm sure. Oboist Toya Spelman-Diaz is a member of Imani Wins. They come in concert to Lansing in the Wharton Center for the Performing Arts on Friday, November the 8th. WhartonCenter.com for all of the information about the program. In your studies at Oberlin and then also the Manhattan School of Music and through orchestras, was there a feeling early on, Toyin, that it was going to be more of an orchestral setting, or when did that turn to you being drawn in particular to wanting to play the chamber music that you have?
Well, while I was studying at Oberlin, I was always very, very interested in chamber music. My senior year, I think I played in 6 chamber music ensembles. And did not take orchestra at all, which was highly unusual for an orchestral instrument like the oboe. I mean, who thinks of the possibility of having a chamber music career as an oboist? There aren't that many of us who play chamber music full time. I feel extremely lucky to have found that. But yes, while I was coming up through studying very intensely classical music, through undergraduate and then graduate degrees, I was sure I was going to be an orchestral musician, and I took auditions all over the country to win one of these coveted, very hard to secure positions. And one time I was in the finals for an audition in Portland for the Oregon Symphony, a very fine orchestra, and I had prepared very, very hard for it, and I was doing extremely well, and I was in the finals for the position, the oboe position, and I was starting to walk out on stage for the final round, like ready. I was ready. I was so ready for it, and I panicked in the middle of walking out, and I was like, oh my gosh, if I win this job, I'm going to be stuck in an orchestra forever. Which is, you know, a wonderful career. I don't mean to in any way say that being in an orchestra is bad. It was just not my way. I wanted more control of who I was playing with and what I would play and what the musicians around me would look like. So when I was taking these auditions, Imani Wins had already started. This was 1997 when the group started, started by our flute player, our former flute player, who was also a composer. And she started a wind quintet made up of musicians of color. And the idea was that the ensemble, Imani Wins, is going to be an ensemble that plays the standard classic chamber music work, the wind quintet repertoire, but at the same time would play music by musicians of color. We would commission. And she, right from the beginning, when our first gig was for 10 people, maybe. she had this vision of us one day being a full-time touring ensemble, and her vision has come true. She's also a composer, and our French horn player, like I said, is a composer. So we play a lot of their music, and we have commissioned many, many works for the wind quintet and for various chamber ensembles. And I can't believe it's a dream come true. If I had known then in that day when I was walking out on stage and blew the final round for the Oregon Symphony, I just did a terrible job that day. But if I had known that it was going to be okay, I wish I had known that everything was going to be okay at the end of it.
Over the two decades then of the ensemble, it sounds as if it is not to trivialize it to say that everything has gone according to plan, but that the vision, the inspiration, the initial passion that you and the other founding members had coming together, that you have been able to realize that dream, bring the music to wider and wider audiences, more than the, as you said, 10 people at the first gig, but also right. the opportunity to commission, to bring brand new works to the stage, to the recordings of Imani Winds. What do you see as the challenges that still lie ahead? Certainly not everyone has heard you, not every composer has written for you, but are there still some of those elusive goals that continue to drive that initial passion, that initial inspiration that brought you all together two decades ago?
That's an excellent question. And yeah, when you've been around as an ensemble for 20 years, or, you know, two decades plus, we've been together 23 years, you start to think, what's next? It's the same now. You know, I'm in my 40s now, and I'm thinking, what can I do now? What's the second act for me, in addition to playing with Imani Winds. So the ensemble has decided that it's not enough for us to look a certain way or to commission works by composers. We commission a lot of composers of color, but it's more than that. It's more than the way we are and the culture that we come from. The music that we're commissioning nowadays is relevant to the times we live in. So for instance, the passion for Bach and Coltrane that my father's poetry was the impetus for. It's a highly personal, I'm playing on stage when we do that. We're doing it in 2 weeks. When we play that piece, I'm on stage with my dad. What a profound thing for a musician to be playing with a family member there present. And the poetry that he wrote, part of it is about, you know, the passion of Jesus Christ, but he compares it within the poetry to a lynching. Another piece that we're doing right now, that we're touring right now, we won't be playing it at Lansing, is a piece by a composer. Her name is Jessie Montgomery, African-American woman. It's about her great-grandfather and his migration from the South to the North to talk. And so the whole concert is based on that idea of migration. And we're in the future, we're commissioning a work by Andy Akiho it's designed to be played outside of an immigrant detention center. So these are the kind of ideas we're having, that it's not necessarily all, they're telling stories of today and the past as it relates today. So our byline these days is Imani Winds, playing music from 100 years ago and the next 100 years. So that's our idea these days.
Does that resonate? I would believe in a very powerful way to the young people through the foundation, through the residencies, through the master classes, through all of the educational outreach that you and the players have made such a central focus of what you do. There seems to be this, I don't know, I think about the things that I was exposed to, the things that I learned about, and yet so much that maybe we're not told. And now today, with every youngster having a device in his or her hand, it seems like not only the current events, but maybe much more of our history, our collective and shared history, and where we all came from and what we've all experienced would be maybe more relevant, depending on how curious they are. What do you find in the reception to those young people when you bring not only the music, but a lot of the messages behind it to them?
Well, they're doing it too. Young people are coming up with the most incredible concert conceptions, they're commissioning works that are relevant to today too. We also have a chamber music festival that we hold every summer in New York City, where 50 to 80 young musicians come and they study with us, predominantly wind players. But they're coming with their own ideas. They're preformed ensembles. They're ensembles who come from different universities, or they might be young people out of school who are trying to make their way in chamber music. And they all are so bright and so interested in making a difference in this world. So it's really inspiring to work with them. We do a lot of work with university students, like we're doing up at MSU in a couple of days. We work with a lot of young people, high school musicians, and they're all thinking this way. I mean, I don't know about you, but I feel like, what can an oboist do? You know, what can an oboist do to make a difference in this world? And so I'm trying to live that truth every day and be brave about it. And these young people are all looking. Another thing is, you know, that we didn't touch on is that the job market for classical musicians is shrinking. And so you have to think outside of the box in order to make yourself stand out. You can't just play your beautiful Mozart concerto anymore. You have to have a vision of what kind of voice you want to have. Because what is success these days? Is it always necessarily winning an orchestral job? Not necessarily. So people are looking to making themselves be relevant to today's times. And that's so inspiring.
So the various experiences then and settings in which you and your fellow members of Amani Winds present, whether it is through the classes, the outreach and so forth, coming to the concert itself at the Wharton Center, the audience as they anticipate the performance on November the 8th, what will be the music that the ensemble brings to the stage that day?
It's a good mix of what the contemporary wind quintet music and repertoire is these days. We're playing two pieces by our resident composers, Valerie Coleman, who is no longer with the ensemble, and Jeff Scott, our French horn player. Those are the bookends of the concert. So we're playing Jeff's piece. It's a kind of a jazzy piece called Startin' Somethin'. And then Valerie wrote a piece for us called Sagan, and it's based on the kind of Romani people's Eastern European flavor that has the diaspora of music that the Romani people have brought to the world, from what's known as gypsy music to the tango, is encompassed in her piece. So those are two really cool pieces there. Usually on an Amani Winds concert, we try to play one of the standard wind quintet repertoire pieces. That's so people can see what the best of the best writing for the ensemble is. So we're playing a piece by John Harbison, which is a fantastic wind quintet, as well as George Ligeti's Sex Bagatelles. That's one of the standard pieces. It's super fun. Runs the gamut of sounds. Those run the gamut of sounds that wind quintet can make. And then the last piece I'll talk about is Rena Esmail. She's a young composer. I think she's 30, or maybe 30. And she wrote us a piece for the 100th anniversary of Gustav Holst's The Planets, the writing of that piece. And it's called The Light is the Same. It's about looking at the stars in the sky and having a completely different concept of what they mean. To some, they could be just balls of gas, or to others, they could be gods and goddesses, and they might be different gods and goddesses based on where you live, but we're all looking at the same light. So we're all joined in being inspired and affected by the planets. So that's the music that we're going to perform. It's a really amazing concert. It's filled with great music. That'll be super fun.
To your good fortune then, and certainly as a testament to your talents and passion, that has come true and continues to provide the backing and the surrounding musical family in which you're able to bring not only the music, but a message and all of these encompassing things to audiences on the concert stage and to the young people who will be taking the mantle at some point in time as they come along. What a wonderful opportunity that has been bestowed on you as a part of Imani Winds and the very unique place that this ensemble has in the multifaceted approach in which you're bringing the art form to so many people. Toyin, it's been just a real delight. The passion and enthusiasm couldn't have been contained by one phone line or however many miles that separate us as we talk today. It is very evident in the love that you have for what you do and how you bring that to other people, and we certainly appreciate your time today. Safe travels. Enjoy the time in Michigan working in the settings that you are with the Detroit Chamber Music Society and also for the concert coming up in Lansing on Friday the 8th. And thank you for being so gracious with your time today.
It was my pleasure, my honor. Thank you for having me come and speak.